Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust, believing growth and productivity of Florida depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust encourages all businesses to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital staff members. More information is at abletrust.org. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
Floridians now have a few more days to register to vote. The decision comes after some worried Hurricane Matthew could disenfranchise voters.
But when the government takes away the time through a natural disaster, the government should return the time.
Critics of a constitutional amendment on solar power call it a wolf in sheep's clothing.
Amendment 1 will not promote solar power. It'll make it harder for people to afford solar power.
And recent revelations of Donald Trump's comments about groping women is raising the issue of sexual assault and consent and leading to some teachable moments. That's coming up on Capitol Report. Good evening and welcome to Capitol Report. I'm Lynn Hatter in for Tom Flanagan. Floridians have a few more days left to register to vote before November. Regan McCarthy reports that's thanks to a group of voting rights activists, the Democratic Party, and a federal judge.
When it comes to getting signed up to vote, history shows Floridians are procrastinators. Last presidential election, thousands of Floridians waited until the last days before the deadline to register. Mirna Perez, who works for the Brennan Center for Justice, says behavioral scientists have an explanation for that.
We tend to resolve the issues that are in front of us more quickly.
But this year, Hurricane Matthew hit Florida just as the state's voter registration deadline approached, and that raised concerns for Perez and her client, the League of Women Voters, who worried thousands might be blocked from signing up.
This is an incredibly important election, and the reason the League was here is because if you are silenced in a particular election, you are silenced for that particular moment in time. You cannot get your right to vote back for that particular moment in time.
The governor pushed back against requests from voting rights groups and the Florida Democratic Party to extend the deadline, saying Floridians had had enough time to sign up. Cecile Schoon, president of the Bay County League, says that argument makes no sense.
If you have a set time and you have 30 days, whatever time frame is for the 30 days, you should be given that time. You're not considered late because you came the 29th day or the 30th day. There should be nothing different. The government ordered people to leave their homes, and well, they should have. That was appropriate. We're not complaining about that. But when the government takes away the time through a natural disaster, the government should return the time.
And federal judge Mark Walker agrees. In his ruling, Walker says the right to have a voice in democracy is the most precious right in our country. Walker ordered a week extension of the state's voter registration deadline, meaning the last day to register is now Tuesday, October 18. And Schoon says her group will be doing all it can to take advantage of that extra time.
And we're registering people yesterday, and we'll register them every day.
That's also the case at the local supervisor of elections office. Leon County recently weathered its own storm, Hurricane Hermine. Election supervisor Ion Sancho attended the hearing.
If what I saw in Leon County in terms of the last storm had happened to me now, I would have wanted an extension because we simply, I know that during the storm that hit us right after the primary, our office was very, very devastated.
Sancho says it's not difficult for him to imagine the elections offices in impacted counties would have a difficult time taking registrations immediately after the storm. He says one thing that could help in the future is online voter registration.
Hopefully after 2018, when we do allow internet voter registration, this would eliminate some of the kind of problems that our archaic process today actually entails. The fact that you have to have a wet signature and not an electronic signature, which most states do accept, really would assist this kind of process. So I think it puts more pressure on Florida to sort of modernize its voter registration procedures so that, in fact, we don't have to face this in the future.
And after receiving pressure from lawmakers last legislative session, the Florida Department of State is working to get an online voter registration system up and running by the fall of 2017. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
In a matter of weeks, Floridians will be asked to decide on a seemingly humdrum amendment giving citizens a constitutional right to solar. But Nick Evans reports opponents are up in arms, claiming power companies are using the initiative as a way to stifle the spread of solar.
Help him with that solar panel, Frank. I need that solar panel.
Al Simpler is building a residential solar array on the outskirts of Tallahassee. It's a large angled frame set up in a pasture next to the house.
Well, this is a ground mount that we're building. It has more airflow behind it than, say, a roof mount. So it's precisely oriented correctly, good airflow behind it, so it actually outproduces any other type of installation.
The homeowner, Eugene Watkins, says the 6.2-kilowatt system will cover about two-thirds of his energy usage in the summer and potentially all of it in the winter. He expects it will pay for itself in 8 to 10 years. And Watkins is unequivocal about this November's solar ballot initiative.
I'd like to make sure everybody knows to vote no in November. Amendment 1 will not promote solar power. It'll make it harder for people to afford solar power.
But supporters tell a different story. Led by the group Consumers for Smart Solar, they say the initiative simply gives Floridians a constitutional right to solar, while guaranteeing state and local governments can take action to protect consumers. The group boasts politicians from both sides of the aisle, a former public service commissioner, and nearly $22 million from the state's largest utility companies. Screven Watson, former head of the Florida Democratic Party and an Amendment 1 backer, says passing the measure should be a no-brainer. He goes through the amendment clause by clause.
Is there anything in the world controversial about the idea of providing a constitutional guarantee to generate your own solar electricity? Is there anything wrong with the idea of allowing government to retain its authority to protect the health, safety, and welfare?
And to ensure that consumers who do not choose to install solar are not required to subsidize the costs of backup power and electric grid access to those who do.
That's Lou Marie Polifka-West reading the last part of the amendment, the one that's riled so many opponents. Amendment 1 seems innocuous because it guarantees rights that aren't threatened. Floridians can already use solar. State and local authorities can already protect consumers. But opponents say that final twist, keeping non-solar consumers from subsidizing those who have solar, is deceptive and could lead to fees or other charges for solar users. Polifka West says she didn't realize that when she saw it on social media.
What happened is it popped up on Facebook, for solar power. And so I liked it.
Shortly after, her friend started asking why she was supporting the measure. That's when Polifka West realized she'd backed the wrong horse. The initiative supporters argue without Amendment 1, solar users could get a free ride, circumventing fees that go toward maintaining the grid. But opponents say the subsidization language is vague enough to be invoked any time a consumer saves money using solar. Preston Robertson is vice president and general counsel for the Florida Wildlife Federation.
And so it seems to give standing to 20 million people, some of whom might make have an interest in denying solar power to their neighbors, the opportunity to stymie the effort to have solar power in the state.
It's those concerns that have brought together groups from the Wildlife Federation to the League of Women Voters in opposition to the proposal. Meanwhile, Polifka West has unliked Amendment 1 on Facebook. But she hasn't stopped there.
Now it has energized me to make sure that I get as many people to understand Amendment 1 is not to be approved. It is not in their best interest. And I will do whatever I can over the next month to get that message out.
For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
It's no secret that longtime Florida Republican strategist Max Stepanovich does not like Donald Trump. This week, he became the latest GOP official to publicly back Democrat Hillary Clinton for president. Stepanovich shares his thoughts on the state of the grand old party and where it goes after this election. When we first began this interview, Stepanovich had just finished speaking with NPR's Morning Edition. The first thing he said was,
"By the way, I just, in case you didn't know, I just said something I've actually never said before,
which
is I was going to vote for Hillary Clinton."
I heard that.
It's a statement sure to give Stepanovich's critics fits. He's long been a staple in Republican Party politics in Florida. Stepanovich has been a campaign manager for Jeb Bush. He's lobbied for the sugar industry and advised former Secretary of State Katherine Harris during the 2000 presidential election and Florida recount. Back in May, Stepanovich penned an open letter to Republicans and called Donald Trump, quote, "a bore, a bully, a carnival barker, and an embarrassment." Now, 5 months and two presidential debates later, his opinion of Trump has not improved.
And to think about what gets said now and has no apparent effect is just unbelievable. It's like we've gone through the looking glass.
Stepanovich says he is beginning to wonder how his party will emerge on the other side. More Republicans are withdrawing their support of Trump. Others, like Florida U.S. Senator Marco Rubio, have condemned the candidate's words, but have yet to fully step back from him. And Stepanovich says that kind of teetering is cowardly, and he calls Rubio one of the worst offenders.
Marco's a smart man. He's a young man. He's got plenty of time to grow. But, you know, to see someone stand up and say that Donald Trump is reprehensible for this reason, I disagree with him for that reason, what he said was terrible, what he said was dangerous, but I'm going to vote for him, is just beyond disappointing. It's demoralizing.
Still, he says the party's troubles will not end on Election Day. The divides this presidential election has exposed in both parties will be lasting, but for Republicans, it may be deeper.
There'll have to be a series of elections, 2018, 2020. The Republican Party is going to be different two or three election cycles than it is now. Will it be a center-right party based on conservative principles, which means that the most rabid Trump-type people have been weeded out? I don't know. Will those center-right conservatives leave the Republican Party and become independents or form another party and leave what is the wreckage of the GOP to the rabid Trump types? That's a possibility, too.
Stepanovich does not know the answer to that, but he's certain in his belief that Donald Trump should not be elected.
Think about how dangerous he is. Think about the poison that he could inject into the body politic of America from the vantage point of the Oval Office. He is dangerous.
But it's not up to Stepanovich. That decision will be in the hands of voters. But for many watchers, Election Day, November 8th, can't come soon enough. Still to come on Capitol Report, social scientists are using the sexual misconduct allegations against Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump to track public perceptions of violence and consent.
I think that the problem is, to us, solving the problem of ISIS seems easier than solving the problem of sexual assault.
In the aftermath of Hurricane Matthew, officials are hoping to address residents' concerns as they work to file claims for storm damage.
This cannot be a moment where pictures are taken and some stories are told and then nothing gets done. And that's our commitment, that if people who have honest claims, who have paid an honest dollar to be taken care of, are going to get taken care of.
And the fallout from Hurricanes Hermine and Matthew could include more regulations for locally owned utilities.
You know, sometimes it takes a natural disaster like this to point out stuff that maybe you should have known all along.
Earlier this month, a 2005 video surfaced depicting Donald Trump bragging about groping women. Since the release, multiple women have accused Trump of sexual misconduct, spurring an overwhelming response on social media and from Republican lawmakers. For some Florida social scientists, it's an opportunity to continue the conversation about what consent is and is not. Kate Payne reports.
Trump denies the allegations and dismisses his speech in the video as, quote, locker room talk. For Florida State University sociologist Dina Rollinger, it's a teaching moment for her and her son.
But the point that we were really able to discuss with our son was that this is a legal activity. These are things that you cannot do, and really talk about consent again with him.
Across the country, Americans are struggling to have this same conversation about what unequivocal consent is and what it means. Moderators brought up the issue at the most recent presidential debate, prompting this response from Donald Trump.
Yes, I'm very embarrassed by it. I hate it, but it's locker room talk, and it's one of those things. I will knock the hell out of ISIS. We're going to defeat ISIS.
I think that the problem is to us, solving the problem of ISIS seems easier than solving the problem of sexual assault.
Dina Rollinger says, in a way, it's easier to talk about terrorism than it is to talk about consent.
And it's because you're not just dealing with one entity. It's not as though we have a face when we see a victim. We have a face associated with sexual assault, but there's just not one group of people that we can blame.
According to the Global Terrorism Database, more than 3,000 Americans died in terrorist attacks from 9/11 through 2014. Meanwhile, the Bureau of Justice Statistics shows more than 280,000 Americans experience sexual assault each year. Sarah Crawley is a sociologist at the University of South Florida. She says for many Americans, the threat of sexual violence is a reality.
The threat of violence is pervasive seemingly across, across women. So it's not just a matter of victims who've actually been assaulted, but kind of the threat of violence and the normalizing of the threat of violence that's particularly concerning.
In the wake of the allegations, author Kelly Oxford wrote about her own assault on Twitter, prompting reactions from more than 30 million users and opening a floodgate of testimonials. And this isn't the first time Trump has made disparaging comments about a particular group. But University of North Florida sociologist Jeffrey N. Wilder says the allegations are having a greater impact because they're affecting Trump supporters.
For a lot of people who were potentially supporting Trump before, he sort of attacked people that they may love and they may know. And I think that is probably the reason why we've seen so much outrage and so much of an outcry.
Sarah Crawley at USF says backlash from the allegations is already showing up in the polls.
The statistical data is quite clear that men in the voting public and women in the voting public are responding very differently to this in terms of whether they continue to be in support of Mr. Trump or, have separated from Mr. Trump.
A recent poll of Florida voters by Opinion Savvy shows Hillary Clinton up by 3 points and suggests the allegations are moving former Trump supporters towards Libertarian Gary Johnson. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Kate Payne.
While Hurricane Matthew did not hit the state as hard as some had feared, it left plenty of damage in its wake. As Sasha Kordner tells us, more than 39,000 Florida residents have filed insurance claims, mostly due to property damage, and that number is expected to rise.
Our expressions of regrets that you've had to go through this.
Thank you.
Certainly, but you're up on your feet and you're fighting back.
Yeah. That's Florida Chief Financial Officer Jeff Atwater speaking to a St. Johns County couple in the aftermath of Hurricane Matthew. Atwater, Florida Insurance Commissioner David Altmaier, as well as other state and local officials recently toured Davis Shores, a St. Augustine neighborhood, or as Republican Senator Travis Hudson calls it.
So this is ground zero. I'm glad people are out here to see it.
Hudson says the goal of the trip was to take the tour with insurance company executives and connect them with people in need.
As you talk about what's happened with this storm, we've got a lot of damage from roads to beach erosion. But in terms of property, in terms of houses, we're at ground zero right now.
Yeah.
Over 300 homes that are just not inhabitable anymore. This is all about recovery now and making sure people get back to their everyday lives.
Residents across the state are raising concerns that insurance companies are taking too long, and CFO Atwater says he and Altmaier are working to address that.
We've been on the phone with them. Their commitment is to absolutely focus on getting to every consumer, everyone back on their feet, taking care of them completely. From our conversations with them, they are talking, they are calling, they are canvassing the streets themselves, talking to their insureds, wanting to hear if there's any issue that they can jump on for them.
And Atwater says the tours and roundtable discussions he and other officials have held will only make that more pronounced.
So our goal here is personal safety was first. Now we're in the recovery, and that recovery must be fast. It must be effective. It must be efficient. People paid a fair and right price to be taken care of, and these insurance company execs are going to be sure they're taken care of. And David and I will help facilitate that process wherever it needs assistance and resources.
About a week ago, just 5,000 claims had been filed due to Hurricane Matthew. As of Friday, that number is nearing 40,000, totaling about $218 million in losses so far. Insurance Commissioner David Altmaier says those are only preliminary estimates, and he expects the number to go much higher over the next several weeks.
This is an opportunity for the insurance company to really demonstrate that they're ready for events of this scale and that they're ready to respond to the situation that these folks in this neighborhood are in today. And so we're going to make sure, as the CFO said, that we continue those discussions and make sure that that's happening, and that if there's a reason why it's not happening, that we assist consumers and companies in removing barriers to that happening and making sure that the claims process gets underway rapidly and efficiently and in a consumer-centric fashion.
Meanwhile, CFO Atwater says Floridian should make sure to take photos of any Hurricane Matthew-related damage and call your insurance company right away. He also warns residents to watch out for disaster repair scams. Atwater says there have already been multiple reports of such scams. Those who need assistance can also contact the CFO's Division of Consumer Services helpline at 1-877-MY-FL-CFO or visit myfloridacfo.com. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
Hurricanes Hermine and Matthew are igniting a power struggle that could affect millions of Florida electric customers. As Jim Ash reports, an influential lawmaker is threatening to put locally owned utilities under the jurisdiction of the Public Service Commission.
More than 80,000 Tallahassee residents lost power when Hermine's Category 1 wind struck in early September. But it was the relative handful still in the dark a week later that has incoming Senate Budget Chairman Jack Latvala worried.
You know, sometimes it takes a natural disaster like this to point out stuff that maybe you should have known all along.
The Clearwater Republican thinks the long wait for some Tallahassee customers is a sign locally owned utilities aren't up to the job of storm recovery. A week after Hurricane Matthew slammed into northeast Florida, some Jacksonville Electric Authority customers are still in the dark. Latvala says he's considering expanding the oversight of the Public Service Commission, which regulates big investor-owned utilities like Gulf Power and Florida Power and Light.
There very likely will be some legislation that will do one of a couple of things. Maybe put the municipals under the purview of the Public Service Commission. Maybe in terms of their whole picture, rates, emergency preparedness, or whatever.
About a quarter of all electric customers in Florida are served by locally owned utilities or cooperatives. To them, Latvala's call sounds like a storm warning. Florida Municipal Electric Association Executive Director Barry Moline says finance and legal costs would skyrocket under PSC regulation.
Anytime a utility engages with the PSC, you have to effectively lawyer up. You have to have a team of high-priced attorneys. It's a judicial setting, and you have to have the proper representation.
Moline says on average, local utilities charge customers 15% less than investor-owned utilities. Wall Street likes the way local utilities are regulated, and changing that structure, Moline says, could raise the cost of borrowing money. Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum says his constituents wouldn't stand for it. They like being able to hold locally elected officials accountable for their utility service, Gillum says.
I think it would be a hugely unpopular idea for citizens in Tallahassee.
Gillum knows how badly accountability can sting. Governor Rick Scott, a Republican eyeing a future U.S. Senate bid, slammed Tallahassee's recovery efforts immediately after Hermine. Gillum, a Democrat, accused Scott of leveraging a disaster for partisan advantage. It may have worked. During Hurricane Matthew briefings, Scott refused to discuss utility regulation.
I'm not getting into that. I want everybody to get their power back. This is not the time for politics, what they should do. I just want everybody to get their power.
Latvala isn't the first to suggest putting local utilities under the PSC. Vero Beach Republican Representative Debbie Mayfield thinks it could solve an unusual problem in her district. Most customers of the Vero Beach utility live outside the city, Mayfield says.
You know, we have 61% of our residents that are on the city of Vero Beach that live in the unincorporated area. So, you know, they have no representation. It's almost like a taxation without representation.
Municipal customers may pay lower rates than investor-owned utilities on average, Mayfield says, but not Vero customers. Mayfield says her constituents would welcome PSC rate-setting authority. But critics say Vero Beach already has a solution, a 2008 law calling for a referendum on setting up a local utility authority. City officials say the law, which doesn't mention Vero by name, doesn't apply to the city. The bill was passed by Mayfield's former husband, Representative Stan Mayfield, shortly before he passed away. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jim Ash.
Finally tonight, many people who can't see on their own rely on a service dog to help them. It's National Blindness Awareness Month, and WJCT's Lindsay Kilbride spoke with a woman who laid out the proper etiquette for those who come across seeing eye dogs out in public.
Emily Michael is a UNF writing professor, a lover of the symphony, and she's blind. She has been her whole life, and for the past couple years, instead of getting around by cane, she's been using...
His name is York, and he's a Labrador. He's a black lab.
Michael says people approach her, or sometimes just York, every day, and most of the time it's with no malice. But most people don't understand service dog etiquette. The fundamental rules are don't make eye contact, pet, or talk to service animals. Michael says it's more for her safety than York's.
If someone walks by and goes, oh, puppy, 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 you know, his head will turn to them. It's like if you're driving on a highway and your vision clicked off.
That's true, she says, even when he looks like he's just relaxing.
Even if he's lying under a table and it looks like he's not doing anything, he is actually working very hard.
Michael says York gets plenty of playtime at home, but when he's wearing his harness, he's her eyes.
October is National Blindness Awareness Month. That was Lindsay Kilbride in Jacksonville. Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Cordner, Nick Evans, Regan McCarthy, and Kate Payne. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Ken Smith, and I'm Lynn Hatter in for Tom Flanagan. Join us Fridays for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows, at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust. 25 years of connecting businesses with workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to interview and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. AbleTrust.org. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.